Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. Later on in the show, Craig and Frank will be here to reflect on what happened in the Premier League today. But we start in the Bundesliga, which turned out to be a great day for Bayern Munich, even though they weren't even playing. Borussia Dortmund taking on Mainz. Dortmund had a number of chances in the first half, but it'd be Mainz who would open the scoring in some style. 58 minutes into this one, Austin Ali, an absolute belter of a goal from a side, let's not forget, going into this tie, bottom of the table. 17 minutes to go. Manua, though, would get the equaliser to make it 1-1. And then just moments later, just after he scored that, penalty awarded here, as Manua is brought down. Marco Reus, who had a big chance in the first half to score, and he missed that, would step up to take the penalty. And he puts it wide. And boy, that would prove to be decisive as it finishes Borussia Dortmund 1, Mainz 1. In the end, it is two big drop points for Dortmund as we welcome in Jan Arge Fjortoff and Jürgen Klinsmann to the show. Jürgen, they're such a frustrating team to watch, Dortmund, because there are flashes of absolute brilliance from them. But at the end of the day, you don't get points for that.
Yeah, and that costs you a lot. I mean, especially today, losing those 2 points in, obviously you hope that Dortmund is getting closer to Bayern Munich and they give them a real fight, a chase towards the title. But with performances like that today, it's just not going to happen. It's sad because obviously you calculate those points in, you play against the bottom team of the league, which is a great fighting team. They have a good spirit. I mean, they proved it at Munich the other day when they were leading at 2-0 at Bayern Munich at halftime, when unfortunately they lost in 5-2. But they were fighting for their lives. You could see that they're in the middle of the relegation battle. But then you expect Dortmund to step it up. You expect some players to take matters in their own hands, and definitely when you have a leader like Marco Reus, who's probably he and Mats Hummels, the two leaders of the team, you've got to put away a penalty because it just costs you too much now, and you lose too many points towards Bayern.
We heard Marco Reus after the game, Jan, come out and apologise and say he missed that big chance in the first half and feels obviously very responsible for missing that penalty in the second.
Yeah, of course you had to say that, but there was an interesting discussion between himself, Jadon Sancho and Erling Haaland, and then Jadon Sancho gave the ball to Marco Reus. Okay, Marco Reus has missed 3 of his last 10 penalties. I think that a goal-getter, Erling Haaland, should take all penalties at that club, by the way. But it's interesting just to strengthen what Jürgen said. Can you imagine Bayern? They're sitting there, having a bit out of form, losing in the cup, losing against Gladbach. And then they have a look at their so-called challengers. Leverkusen missing out against Union Berlin. Dortmund can't even win against Mainz at home. And okay, a point for Leipzig in Wolfsburg, a good Wolfsburg team, could be more normal. But there is no way that these challengers can do anything. I think when you have a look at Dortmund at the moment, they got didn't get that goal because of VAR. Bellingham was okay in first half. But still, that is not good enough. And it's just sad to watch them because there's so much quality and there is so much quality that they manage to hide away in games after games.
What do you do with Marco Reus regarding penalties now, Jürgen? Do you have a private word and say, look, I'm going to now switch it to Haaland as my number one?
Well, I think there is no need for a private word. I mean, Marco is disappointed himself. Haaland eventually will grow into that role and will take every opportunity to score a goal with a penalty. That's just what a number nine, a goal scorer, is doing. So they will take their lesson out of this, but it's too late because today was the opportunity to close the gap a little bit on Bayern. And in the first half, they were clearly the better team. They put them constantly under pressure. They created chances, but they were not decisive enough. They were not determined enough. Jan said, I think Bellingham, he played a very good game, and I was actually surprised when he was subbed out at about 60 minutes into the game. And then you have to use other opportunities to finish things off. I mean, Öztunali's goal was a beautiful goal by Mainz. Mm. But then still, once you get back into the game with Meunier's goal, which was nice too, you got to finish it off and get 3 points.
Change of manager doesn't really seem to have changed too much, really, Jan.
No, and that is not surprisingly, because I think that it takes time to get that culture in there. And I think that is the same weaknesses that we've seen for Dortmund, really, for many, many years. I also agree that the leader's got to stand up. It can't be like in some games that the youngest kids are the one who should lead by the front. I mean, yes, we are talking about the weaknesses of Dortmund. We are talking about also, but Mainz, it's a bit fun fact, the guy who scored, it's hard to say this word, is the grandchild of Uwe Seeler. And Uwe Seeler, one of the legends of German football. And we have one legend there, wow, with Klinsmann, of course. But that is a fantastic player, a player in his time. And I think that those kind of fun facts, that makes my life a bit cooler.
What a sad life you lead, Jan, if that's a highlight of your day. Meanwhile, playing at the same time, Leipzig against Wolfsburg. And they drop points as well, Jan.
They do, and it's interesting to follow Julian Nagelsmann because sometimes you tend, it's so hard to see his starting 11. You keep the Paulsen and Sørloth out there. Having said that, I mean, going to Wolfsburg, I've been impressed by Wolfsburg this season. They're a good team, and I ask people to be aware of number 9 of Wolfsburg, a typical number 9, big guy, Weghorst. He scored a game today. He will come to a club close to you very soon. There is not many of that caliber, and I'm not just speaking about his football skill, I'm just talking about that big number 9. They tend to get old-fashioned, these kind of strikers. With a good striker and a 2-2 for them in Wolfsburg was more normal. But having said that, Bayern playing Freiburg tomorrow, and they will laugh their head off, as they usually do when the challengers have a chance to get closer.
Yeah, Leipzig and Wolfsburg, obviously, we know they're tough opponents. They're having a good season, Jürgen. But you feel if Leipzig are going to really challenge, you've got to win these games, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to win at Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg playing really a very good season. I mean, part of the games I kind of followed a bit closely, John Brooks, you know, he's really kind of the centerpiece of that defense at Wolfsburg, keeping things together. And then obviously, as Jan said, you have Weghorst up front, who's a scoring machine at the moment. So it's not easy, Wolfsburg, but if you really want to go for the big thing, which is winning the title in Germany at one point in time, you got to win those away games, those difficult away games. And that's another setback, a little setback for Red Bull Leipzig.
You mentioned, Jan, obviously Bayern taking on Freiburg on Sunday. Just give us some of the headlines. Where is the finger of blame being pointed after a disastrous week for them?
Well, it's interesting with so-called experts. I mean, they're winning the Champions League because their back four is standing high. Then they're winning that. And we remember there was a lot of discussion, should they do that against PSG? No, they're losing. That is the reason why. I think it's a bit simpler than that. I think Bayern has been unbelievable, as we all can agree on. But I think that Bayern is also, it's normal that also the great players, they go down a couple of percentages, and they then with a lose game. And the Holstein Kiel kind of game, I mean, we all experience those kind of games. They suddenly just happen for no reason. I don't think it is anything wrong with Bayern. It's just they're taking a bit off the pedal, which is normal. They've been unbelievable lately, but they still managed to be on the top. But Bayern and Jürgen should have that question more than I do. He knows what's going on in Bayern when they're losing one game.
Jürgen, do you agree?
Yeah, it's also a little bit of a normal thing. Once you kind of put the foot off the pedal for a little bit, you go 85-90%, you might get punished. It happened now in the cup in Germany, which is a very prestigious competition in Germany. But it also can happen because, you know, they flew up to Holstein Kiel. It's up in the very north of Germany, snowstorm, and then they go into extra time, and then they lose on penalties. But what is typical for the environment in Munich is then obviously they will go back to business right away because they are angry at themselves. There's no much need to have big words. You know, everybody is aware of when things go a little bit the wrong direction, so they try to correct that right away. So I expect a strong performance by Bayern tomorrow.
Thank you very much, and more from Jürgen and Jan a little later on in the show. Just a reminder how things stand for Bayern going into Sunday's clash against Freiburg. They're currently 1 point ahead at a chance then after Leipzig, of course, Leverkusen and Dortmund all drop points. A chance for the defending champions to extend their lead to 4 points at the top of the table. So it's Bayern Munich against Freiburg. That's 9:30 Eastern tomorrow on ESPN+, followed by Inform Schalke, who travel to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
In the Premier League today, Chelsea with a 1-0 victory away against Fulham. But boy, were they made to work hard for it. A late goal from Mason Mount proving to be the difference between the two sides. Let's welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Craig Burley to the show. Craig, if you're a Chelsea fan, you think, right, good 3 points. Let's try and use that now to build some momentum. Or are you concerned given the fact that Fulham really could have gotten something from this game, especially when they had 11 men on this pitch?
I think if you're Frank Lampard, you're pleased. But I think if you're a Chelsea fan, you're concerned at the moment because there was nothing really in that performance to suggest that there's a string of results coming, positive results. So, you know, and every game in its own merit is different. But let's be quite frank about it. Fulham had, when it was 11v11, looked as big a threat, if not a bigger threat, and had the best chance of the first half, which Caviero should have really put away. So, yeah, I mean, Chelsea huffed and puffed. The sending off was key, obviously, and it was a silly challenge from a player who, and Robinson, had looked really good going down that left-hand side during that first half, but he made a rash decision. And ultimately, that's what got Chelsea over the line in the end, because it was just constant pressure as the game went on, and Mason Mount, who's been very consistent for his manager, got them the winner that really, really bailed him out this week.
Frank, you've seen a lot of Chelsea this season. I think this game kind of showed it up as well. You don't quite get what their plan is.
That's a big question mark, you know. I don't know what's going on in the players' head, you know. In fact, you know, when I see them playing, I don't see any change of rhythm. I don't see any, in fact, ideas of what they work during the training session, maybe. Well, the only satisfaction is they won that game away from home in a derby, and that I saw Rüdiger playing at the back and had a very good game, very, very good game, and that's it. But otherwise, I will have to go with Craig. You know, if I'm a Chelsea fan, I'm very concerned about the future, especially when I see Leicester playing against Southampton tonight straight after and winning against Southampton that we're going to talk about. You know, the pace of the game is completely different. I don't know what's going on with the players. We saw Werner coming in, you know, had a big chance to score, put the ball so far away from the net. The only satisfaction is Mount. I have to say at front, and I think Frank is falling in love with that guy because he's a kind of a saver right now. But the others, well, Giroud had his game, but not too much chances to score. But that, apart from that, there is a big problem again in the middle of the park. And N'Golo Kante was suspended, but there is nothing much a link between the defense and the attack. And I see a big empty space in between the two lines, which is not fully filled in because of the players who know how to do it with the ball slowly for your Jorginho and Kovacic, but don't defend properly and don't link the two lines.
Where's the spark, Craig?
It's gone, isn't it, really? It's, you know, I think they were top of the league, not you know, was it a few weeks ago or whatever it was, and, you know, they went to Sevilla with their second team, crushed them away in Spain, and everything was looking rosy, and they've just lost that sparkle. They had the defeat up at Everton, which I don't know if it was the start of it, but it was certainly a big part of it. And look, I was surprised by his team selection as well today. At times I thought starting without Hudson-Odoi, who's looked as bright as anybody from a wide position, was a surprise to me. I think it was to a lot of people as well. And the fact he left so late to bring him on, it was a surprise. I thought he could have took three or four of them off at half-time, but I thought Pulisic was one of them again, and he's disappearing up his own backside at times. You know, we know Ziyech is a clever player, so he's always going to try and utilise him, whether it's bringing him inside or leaving him out in the wider position. As Frank mentioned, Werner's a concern. I mean, he was through at that one, he was through at the end. He didn't just miss. He missed by about 10 yards. I mean, he can't hit a barn door at the moment, and he might turn that around. He probably will. But whether he turns it around in enough time to save his manager's bacon remains to be seen. And Mason Mount, a young guy who is not a big money signing and was out at loan in a championship club a couple of years ago at Derby County, is the guy that's hitting the home runs at the moment. Because, and in fact, he's probably one of the first names on the team sheet, Dan. Mm. And that's kind of where they are. Here we have a young man who's a grafter, who's got endeavour, he's got the guts to go and work, and he'll never hide. But he's not a big money signing. And he's the one that Lampard's kind of leaning on at the moment. Go and play wide right. Go and play a little bit deeper in the middle of the plot. Go and play behind the front man. Get me a goal. He's really leaning on that young man at the moment. And that, for me, would be a huge concern going forward.
Yeah, so, Craig, how much does this fall at Frank Lampard's door regarding coaching these new players who have come in? Or how much is it down to them and maybe the recruitment was wrong?
Well, listen, you can talk about recruitment all you want, but the buck will always stop with the manager, and Lampard knows that. Look, it's a concern when you're looking at your bench and you think, well, do I really want to have to bring on Timo Werner and Kai Havertz? Two guys that were stars in the Bundesliga, but that's where they are at the moment. And ultimately, the choice he made, Lampard, was to go at one point to a 4-4-2 and bring two big lumps up front and Giroud and Tammy Abraham. So that he's going to have to, they're going to have to figure that out in the training ground. He's going to have to figure that out. But listen, it could have been worse for him. It could have been worse. It could have been a draw or a defeat at Fulham, who are going to be fighting relegation. They're a little tidy side, but it could have been worse. It's not the worst Saturday night he is going to have, but there's not a lot within the performance in general, I think, to suggest at the moment that he's out of the woods just quite at this moment in time.
No, that's very telling, isn't it? It's very true in the fact that Chelsea did pick up the 3 points, their first domestic win in the Premier League of the new year, their second in seven games. What's going to be really interesting is their next match, Frank, which is against Leicester. And we saw Leicester today move up to second in the table with a 2-0 victory over Southampton. And it's chalk and cheese. When you look at Leicester, there's a plan there. You can see what the plan is. You can see what Brendan Rodgers is expecting of his players. And I know that he's had longer to deal with them and he hasn't had the influx of new players over the summer. Yet still, this is going to be a real test for Chelsea coming up, isn't it?
Yes, it's going to be a big test because, well, you know, Leicester, you know, if I recall properly, you know, I put them in the top six, but behind Chelsea. But I think I maybe mixed it up because Leicester is second in the league right now and deserve completely to be in that position because the involvement of the players, the ideas the tactical ideas of Rodgers are there too. And we see the commitment of everybody and the way they play, when they structure the game, how they pace it up, you know, at a certain point, and how they think about football. I mean, The last 15, 20 minutes, we saw Southampton trying to get back into the game and equalize. We saw Leicester defending properly, very much properly, and playing in counter-attack. And Tielemans, which I saw playing for Monaco and being completely all over the place, really awful, being the top man. You know, Maddison comes back to his best. Vardy does what he has to do. The young Fofana, who I saw playing for Saint-Etienne, is fantastic. I've been substitute today, but did the job. Everybody does the job and play all together. They play all together. That's my main concern about Chelsea. And when I see Leicester playing soon against Chelsea, That's going to be a tricky game for Frankie and the players.
Right.
Yeah, we saw, for those that saw watched the Leicester game, saw Vardy go off towards the end. It looked like he had a bit of a niggle. So we don't know how much of a problem that is, but the sort of Leicester plan disintegrates somewhat if he's not available. But let's just say he's going to be okay. If this Leicester team... And look, this was a victory for Chelsea today, but it doesn't get Frank Lampard off the hook. He knows that. And if this Leicester team were to dismantle them, and they've already done that to Manchester City this year, a City side who have been clearly better defensively, they took them apart with the counter-attacking football that Frank was talking about, then Chelsea are going to have to figure this out. Otherwise, Frank Lampard's owners could be looking at the Leicester manager, who I think most of us agree is a very experienced and good coach, and he's getting linked with numerous jobs. They might just look to him and say, well, I tell you what, he used to work here. He's doing a great job again at another club. Mm. I think we could be doing a bit better with him. So Lampard needs to figure this out. And, you know, if they get it wrong against this Leicester side and Vardy's fit, they could easily dismantle you because, let's be honest, in the second half today, they should have had 3 or 4, but the finishing was poor. But if Vardy's fit and they suck Chelsea onto them, they will hit you on the counter-attack. And that's going to be another headache for Lampard to figure out. So listen, it's a good Saturday night for him because it's 3 points, but the next one is around the corner. And he knows he's on the hot seat. There's no doubt about that. He's not a stupid guy. He knows what's needed. It's results, and he needs a lot of them.
Yeah, what a game that is going to be on Tuesday. Craig and Frank, thank you very much. More for Frank on Extra Time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Sunday in the Premier League is, of course, all about Liverpool against Manchester United as we welcome Jurgen Klinsmann and Jan Arge Fjortoft back to the show. Jan, I imagine you'll be watching this game in your full Manchester United kit, Solskjaer, shin pads, the whole shebang.
I will wear it in my Norwegian shirts. I think that is a more neutral way to see it. I spent a week in England watching Manchester United against Manchester City, and I was in the Manchester United-Watford game. I talked a lot about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and he's confident going in there. And I think that he sees this as a very good sign that Jurgen Klopp now suddenly start talking about all the penalties Manchester United get. So I think that Ole Gunnar now getting a bit more respect, but of course he knows to stop all his critics, he has to win titles, of course, but he also have to stand up against a Jurgen Klopp team at Anfield. I think this is a very open game. I think that Manchester United have done well, very well. I mean, not that I think, it's just the fact that they've done well away from home. And I think they've got everything to win in this game. And imagine, I just say in imagine, when we have a look at the table, imagine Manchester United should get away with it. A 1-0 Bruno Fernandes penalty in the 93rd minute. and they'd be 6 points ahead of Liverpool. And Jurgen Klopp always says, I don't do mind games. Okay, let's see after that game if they win the game.
Wow, yeah, imagine the furore. Late dodgy penalty is awarded at Anfield. That, of course, a troll. Jurgen, from a neutral's point of view, you can't wait to see this sort of encounter.
Absolutely. I mean, who would have thought that he plays the number one team against the number two team at this point in time in the Premiership? I think it will be an exciting game. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has done an amazing job so far this season. Really big, big compliment to him. It's fun to watch that Man United team. It's fun to watch Pogba. It's fun to watch, obviously, Fernandes. You know, he kind of pulls out of his arm a guy like Cavani, who suddenly fits into this whole picture. So it's fascinating to see what happens at Man United at the moment. But obviously, we know all Jurgen Klopp, that he's an extremely, extremely ambitious guy, you know, and highly energetic. And so it will be very difficult for Man United, but it will be hopefully a very entertaining game.
Yeah, and I'm just intrigued because there are obviously a long history between Liverpool and Scandinavia and Norway and the support. Stevie Nicol talks about going over there and just being amazed by the number of fans that are there. The fact that Solskjaer is doing so well, flying that Norwegian flag, what is that doing to the supporters' groups? I imagine it's quite the divide in the country, isn't it?
It is. And Liverpool, Manchester United, by far the most popular clubs. I mean, they are quite equals in members. We've had our match of the day since 1969 in Norway, meaning that we have a live game every in our time, 4 o'clock, England time, 3 o'clock. And Liverpool, Manchester United always been the popular clubs. I mean, Solskjaer first as a player increased the membership, and now as a manager, you can imagine. But it's the kind of two campus, they are very, very tight to each other before this game. And that's what I'm saying, that the Manchester United fans, for 8 years, this 8 years since they've been the best club in England, I'm not saying they're going to be there this year, but now it's at least they have a shot at the possibilities of the Premier League title, and we know we're not only half of the season, but still, for them, it's big. And I see my friends have used, they've been away now for 8 years. Now they're suddenly crawling out of their snow holes to show their shirts again.
It's a great doubleheader because you've got that game, and then you switch over to Italy, Juventus against Inter Milan. You've got so much at stake, even though it's quite early on in the season, you feel, heading into this match.
Yeah, this is a highly, highly intense match. It can't get any bigger in Italy than Inter playing Juventus. And I spoke to a couple of friends of mine in Milan in the last few days, and they cannot wait until this game is kicked off. So it will be super interesting, similar to Man United Liverpool. So it's going to be an absolute highlight tomorrow.
Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, defending champions up against an Inter side, Jürgen, that a lot of people feel should win it this season, given the fact they're out of Europe, given the strength of their squad, given the fact that Pirlo is very much heading up this very much transitional time at Juventus. So would it be fair to say there's more pressure on Inter going into this game than Juve?
I would say so, yes. I mean, obviously, Juventus is always expected to be on top at the end of the year, and everybody's curious how this transition is working now under Pirlo. Step by step, they're catching up. But since, obviously, Inter unfortunately left the Champions League in an early stage after the group stage, there's huge expectations on Inter Milan. I mean, the people in Milano now really, really expect big things in the Serie A, in the Championship. The Inter fans, and I talk to a lot of them on a weekly basis, they expect a title this year.
Yeah, this is it, isn't it, Jan? Big boy time. If you really want to prove your title credentials, you've got to beat Juventus, you feel, on Sunday.
Absolutely. And what I think is very interesting, you have that winner mentality of Conte being there for ages. And then we sometimes forget that, because Pirlo was a magnificent football player, he has just been coached for 3.5 minutes. And it's quite interesting then to see, when you go into these top games, these decisive games, what kind of leader are you? And I guess Pirlo, with all this experience, will use that. But we should then again, it's not always like that if you have the same pressure as a player, as a coach. So what an interesting game. And I'm so looking forward to that game too. It's going to be a busy weekend for all, or a busy Sunday for everybody who loves football.
So that Inter-Juve game, one of 5 matches tomorrow on ESPN+. Join us at 2 p.m. Eastern, though, for a comprehensive build-up. Jürgen will be with us as well, looking ahead to that game. Monday is when we see AC Milan in action away against Cagliari.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Great day tomorrow, isn't it? Liverpool against Manchester United, then switch on ESPN Plus at 2. I'll be joined by Jürgen to look ahead to Inter Milan against Juventus, and then ESPN FC live off the back of that game to bring you everything you need to know from a Super Sunday. But for now, I'll leave you with extra time. Frank and Jan answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, Frank LeBeuf with us from Paris. Jan, meanwhile, are you in a cabin in the Norwegian mountains? This sounds made up, Jan.
Ski wonder, winter wonderland. I'm doing 2 hours cross-country today in sun, blue skies. When the COVID is gone, boys, come to Norway.
Isn't cross-country skiing really boring?
No, it's not, because it's good training, it's good for your body. I'm not getting fatter, not thinner either, unfortunately, but it's still good. It's a good way to train.
Hey, do you think it would help Stevie's diet if we send him over to Norway, cross-country skiing with you?
Englishmen or Scots. Scott's got to be on cross country. He would probably break something, so I don't think you should do that.
Jan, you have always defended Ollie. However, do you think tomorrow it will show that he is out of his depth comparing to the top boys and managers?
I don't think if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer winning tomorrow, he's the perfect manager. I don't think if Ole Gunnar loses tomorrow, he's out of his depth. But it's right. The only way Ole Gunnar can stop the critics about this PE teacher tag that someone want to give him is to win titles. That's all what Manchester United is about. It's 8 years since they were the best club in England, and now at least they have a chance. And there is a big way, it's a big symbol tomorrow. Should they win, they would be 6 points ahead of Liverpool. I mean, talking 1 year back, that was not we couldn't think of that. So I think it's a big chance for him tomorrow. If they should lose, I mean, we know what people will say. People are so predictable. So we know that, but it's going to be a great game.
And what will you say if he wins, Jan? That's quite predictable as well, isn't it?
I would say that where is the cue for the people who are skepticism or frustrated that he's the Manchester United manager? I know how to tweet on Twitter that people go ballistic, so I'm looking forward to that.
Aren't we all? Frank, what was the most hostile environment you ever played at?
Oh, definitely Galatasaray. Ooh. In the Champions League.
Yeah.
Even if the end was absolutely fantastic, I was the captain of Chelsea that night, and in fact, before the warm up, an officer from the Turkish army came to me and say, "Are you all there?" I say, "Yes, I think." He say, "No, you don't have to think. You have to be sure. Are you all there?" And I say, "Okay, I'm going to start counting." So I counted every player, and then he say, "Okay, are you ready?" And we went down, and it was like a tunnel, then stairs to go up and go behind the goal at the old stadium. And he said to all the guys from the army, he said, "You know, ready for the shield." They put the shields down, and we went down below the shields, and we heard so many noises, like, I don't know, some stuff, you know, going to our head. Wow. And we ran to the field. And it was really, really scary. And we won 5-0. Can you believe that? We won 5-0.
Wow, Frank.
We were flying. Torre André Flo had a wonderful game. I think he scored 2 or 3 goals. He was the man of the match. We won 5-0, and at the end of the day, at the end of the game, no Turkish fans were still in the stadium. We finished with only the Chelsea fans. Memorable game, memorable results, fantastic experience at the end of the day.
Yeah, I bet it was. Jan, the most intense experience you've had?
Well, I'm that old, so I played against Soviet Union. So I played when they were a nation. So not it was very hostile or scared or anything, but it was quite special to play in East Europe at that time. And yeah. I remember we played in away game in Soviet Union, and I had all these soldiers in the stands and everything. But it was still a great experience, and I never felt like Frank is saying there. I must say, Frank, though, most of the best answers ever when you're winning 5-0 in a hostile atmosphere as that.
That was something special. That was very special. But I think we did well because we were scared. But I think we went all together. We knew right. that the only way to survive around that hostile environment is to stick together. And it's why we were better. Yeah. I mean, I played the same thing with the French national team. We played against Romania. And it was a really tough game because Romania was at the time very, very strong. And we had to win in order to get qualified for the European Championship in 96 in England. And we won 3-1 there, where we definitely were the underdog. But we were so scared. The atmosphere was so hostile that, again, we stuck together, and it's why we got the results.
Jan, we know Frank has a large collection of kits from other players. Do you have any favourite swap kits?
Yes, I have. Being in a national team, we managed to swap shirts. Sometimes I was a bit unlucky because you only, as a striker, you could swap with the defenders because they were closest to you, and sometimes you wanted a superstar up front. I think one of the most precious shirts
I want to hear the what follows.
I have one from Dennis Bergkamp that I'm very glad of. I was a big fan of Dennis Bergkamp, one of the genius of football. So yes, I have a lot of shirts at home, precious memories, and one of the few memories you kind of have from your football are these shirts. What do you do with all the shirts? Some you give away, some you give to charity, but still the most precious one I absolutely keep. And when we came to England, I came to England 93-94. That was the second year of the Premiership. And then they started swapping shirts there as well, which was quite good because then you have good memories after the game.
Dan, can you ask Jan, where does he think Jadon Sancho will end up if he doesn't go to Manchester United? Classic.
Well, yeah, it's a classic, but I think it's another bold game now because Jadon Sancho the last couple of weeks getting a bit better in form, creating and scoring some good goals. But I think it's another bold game now. I think that Manchester United was the front runner. They had their chance. They didn't want to pay the money. He would have gone there. He was ready to go there. But I think now coming up to the summer, it's very, very hard to analyze the transfer market because of COVID. We see now Southampton, we see Arsenal, they're taking loan just to kind of survive, have the liquidity, I think that is English word for it, till the summer. And that will mean something when you see the transfer amount. So I think that also Dortmund got to lower their expectation of a transfer fee, meaning that other clubs will be in for them. I just remind people that Watzke, the CEO of Dortmund, is the best friend of Jurgen Klopp. So I think there will be more runners for Jadon Sancho.
Lots of questions for Jan. How will Mesut Ozil, Jan, fit in at Fenerbahce? Will sitting out for so long negatively affect his performance on the pitch, or will it motivate him even more?
I hope so that he will, in this time he's been out, somehow he's turned it around, at least through the social media, try to show that he's very in there for Arsenal and all that kind of things. I hope for hopefully he has a hunger to show himself. If he now goes to Fenerbahce, that is kind of his second, first homeland of Turkey. And if he goes there, I hope he'll get a good end to his career, because it's been a lot of criticized, at least now also from the Arsenal fans, because of the amount of money he's earning. So I just hope that Özil, being a Real Madrid, being a world champion, that he will get a good end and a good farewell to his career, wherever he plays now.
Jan, do you think it's good for Jovic to be back at Eintracht Frankfurt?
Well, it's quite interesting because Eintracht Frankfurt suddenly had to sell the Bas Dost to Brugge. Talking about COVID, they needed money. They got 4 million euro for him. Maybe not a big amount, but that was an important amount of money. Mm. And Freddy Bobic is one of the best sport directors around. He's a head of sport at Eintracht Frankfurt. And I think that was a dream for all Frankfurt fans to get Luka Jovic back. And you just saw Luka Jovic arriving at the airport in Frankfurt. He looks like he's so happy because he's been struggling at Real Madrid, and hopefully together with Silva, they will get maybe Eintracht Frankfurt into Europe this season.
Frank, on the 1st of January, Jan said he looks like a Norwegian president. But for me, Jan looks like a country music singer. What do you think?
Okay. But I don't know. I'm always been fond of Jan and the way he looked, especially. I mean, he looks like a real music star. You're absolutely right, you know. He looks like, I don't know, somebody. I wouldn't say the Bee Gees, but not too far from there. You know what I mean? You know, look, the singer, I'm talking about the singer of the Bee Gees. The two others weren't very, very handsome. But Jan is obviously a handsome man. But it's true, he has something artistic around him, you know, something special, who made me think that he's more an artist, a singer, than a political person. Yeah, for sure. You're right, Dan.
Do you play any music?
You can see by the way I use my way, I'm a trainer.
Oh my goodness, that gracious was, me.
That was Barry Gibb. For those of you who didn't understand, that was Barry Gibb.
Oh dear, fortunately we'd have to pay royalties for that, because that's nowhere near like the original. Jan, do you do any music? Do you play any musical instruments?
I can do one song on the piano, which is very good, because I just do Let It Be. I'm very good at Let It Be.
Beautiful.
I just do it, and then everybody will say, do another one, but that's all I can. But I can play after notes, by the way, so I can do a bit.
Oh, see, you're right, Frank. Okay, since you've traveled to various countries, which country's culture and tradition did you find so fascinating that you involved them in your daily life and still follow them? Jan, Germany, would that be fair?
Well, I've learned a lot from Germany. Sometimes I think Germany is criticized for different things, but I like to work in Germany because they're very predictable. They're hardworking people. They're disciplined. I like that. I had a fantastic time in Vienna. Vienna, I love the Austrians, a bit more laid back kind of thing. Great humor as well. But I must say, if I'm going to choose some kind of countries that I haven't played in, but I've been to and most influenced in my daily life about my meal, about history and the Renaissance and everything, is going to be Italy.
Oh, nice. What about you, Frank? You hate Italy.
No, I don't. No, that's not true. There is a big competition between French and Italians to know who has the best cuisine, the best wines, and the best countryside, whatever it is. But I'm very fond of Italy. And for myself, you know, I traveled the world, and it's not because I played in England or in Qatar, or then after I went to the States, that those countries inspired me for the rest of my life. I think I went twice, in Mauritius Island, and I love the way people live. They share, I mean, you have religion, every religions that you can find all around the world, but they share it, they even share, you can see a mosque next to a church. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic. It's a peaceful island, and the way they live, the way they think about life is absolutely what I would love to follow.
Oh, nice, what a nice Zen way to... Go on, Jan.
I will also say, Dan, because it's interesting, because I played football in four different countries, and one of the main thing that is so good with traveling and try to have a bit success in the countries you're having, any job, is to try to be a bit like the country you are at. So if you are in Austria, you have to half be an Austrian and Norwegian. So the same in England, you just have to understand them. And I had in Germany as well. And when you come back after your career, and I like the way Frank described it there, sometimes that you keep into your life somehow. When for example, I hear Oasis. For me, Oasis is the band of the 90s. That is English for me. Things, small things like that you take with you. And when I met one of Noel Gallagher after a game for Manchester City, I was so starstruck, I nearly asked for the autograph.
Wow. No Bee Gees, though, are they, Jan? That's it. Thank you very much. ESPN FC will be back on your screens tomorrow. Massive day tomorrow. United taking on Liverpool, Juventus against Inter. Be sure to join us.